This is Writer's Cast, a podcast about books and authors. I'm your host, David Wilk. Today I have the great pleasure of talking to Quang Lu. He's the author of a book called The Buddha in Jail, Restoring Lives, Finding Hope, and Freedom. It's a beautiful, very short, very powerful book, and it's really a great pleasure for me to talk to you. Thank you, Quang, for being here.
Thank you, David.
So your story is very unusual, I think. You left Vietnam. You were born in Vietnam in 1968, and then you ended up living in Holland, where you live now. Could you maybe talk just a little bit about what happened to you? How did, you know, how your early life and what got you to Holland?
I was born in the war, the Vietnam War, 1968, and I was a child of war, and the Vietnam War ended in 1975, and in 1979, my parents moved to Holland, and that was the choice. That was not my choice. I just went with them as a kid, 12 year old, and I brought something with me, and I didn't notice, and that was the war inside of me. I didn't notice that as a child. And one time I was ready to have a fight with a Dutch friend in Holland, and he said to me, "Quang, we are friends and we don't fight." And it was for the first time I got in touch with peacefulness, and at the same time, for the first time, I understood the war inside of me, the violence inside of me. I didn't see that. Until that moment, I could see the violence inside of my mind. I brought with me from Vietnam. And there was a moment of enlightenment. It was a very powerful moment. It's still a very powerful memory for me. And later on, when I worked as a Buddhist chaplain, I noticed the same thing. The prisoners, they are unable to get in touch with the suffering in them, in themselves. And they are not, the prisoners, they were not able to recognize the violence in their mind until we can come to them with peacefulness.
Do you think that, I've thought about this partly because of your book, but also I just was listening to a story about a man, he's now a man, but he was a boy when he was sexually abused. And he said in that story that he didn't know what to do with that abuse, so he just became angry and acted out and did terrible things because he couldn't comprehend or process what had happened to him. And of course, he was powerless as a boy. But do you think that, I think this is suggested in your book, but I'm kind of interested to hear you talk about whether this violence and painful things that happen to people that are cause them pain is passed down through their lives to other people when they don't themselves reconcile it.
In fact, suffering and violence is only bad when we don't see it. When we are able to see it and we understand what it is, when you understand the violence in yourself, the suffering in yourself, and you, I'm sure you won't cause any suffering to any person if you understand what it is. And And the problem is we judge suffering and violence as something bad. And thanks to my practice as a Buddhist monk, Buddhist practitioners, Buddhist chaplain, I've been able to make peace, to get in touch with the silence, with the peacefulness inside of me. And I have the capacity to stop judging suffering, to stop judging violence. And when I see these people, I come as a friend with in peace. And my presence, it helped them for the first time to see, to get in touch with the suffering, and therefore they are able to understand what has happened to them in their life for the first time.
So one of the questions I have, you know, I've read a lot of Buddhist writing, and I feel like I don't fully comprehend the notion of suffering. And it may be because I come to it from a Western point of view, but it seems to me that the word suffering as used in Buddhism is different from the word suffering that's used in common everyday language.
Yes.
Can you maybe explain a little? I know that it's a big subject. It's one of the, it's the first truth.
No, it's okay. I'm happy to explain because the Buddha, he said suffering is a noble truth. So suffering is a truth. And it means when you can see suffering, it is something beautiful. When I'm able to get in touch with my suffering, I can understand myself better, but I also can understand you, David, much better. And the understanding of suffering, we call that compassion. Compassion, it means you understand your suffering and the suffering of the other person. Compassion. And compassion is one of the deepest kind of happiness, of joy. Compassion. When you have compassion in yourself, you are a happy person. So you can say that suffering as a noble truth is exactly the same as happiness as a noble truth. That is what I have written in my book.
Yes, and I that was a kind of what spurred me to ask that question, because is it possible to then see that suffering and happiness are equally projections of the mind?
Suffering and happiness, first of all, are ideas of the mind. They're ideas, and when we go through our idea about suffering and of about happiness, and we get in touch with the nature, the true nature of suffering and happiness, and we see they are in fact the same. When you touch the suffering deeply without being afraid of it, you are touching your happiness. It's so beautiful if you can come back to yourself and you can get in touch with your own suffering. Or you can go to the other person and you can get in touch with his suffering. And at that moment, compassion is born, happiness is born. So to me, we are afraid of suffering because we have a certain idea about suffering. And we desire too much for happiness because we have an idea about happiness. But looking deeply into happiness, you see suffering. And looking deeply into suffering, you see happiness. And my teacher, he called that interbeing. To be is to interbe. To be, it means suffering is separated from happiness as a being, and to interbe means suffering is happiness, and happiness is suffering. And I am you, and you are me.
And that seems to be at the core, I mean, it is at the core of your book in terms of your work. This book is really about your spending time as a prison chaplain in Holland. I assume, I don't know anything about prisons in Holland as opposed to prisons here, but I presume they're similar. And that the, and it, as you describe them, the people who you worked with were generally violent or, you know, and certainly the prison environment itself is very frustrating and upsetting to people's conceptual framework of themselves when they don't have a way of working with it. And so you, how many years did you work in the, I mean, do you still work in the prison?
No, I'm teaching Buddhist psychology now. I work in a prison for 6 years.
And in the book, you talked a lot about the individual experiences that you had with prisoners, but you didn't really talk a lot about the process, which I makes sense. I understand why you wouldn't do that necessarily, but was it principally that you taught the prisoners how to meditate, how to a Buddhist mindful meditation?
David, believe it or not, sometimes I didn't do anything. I just came in, and because when we don't understand the nature of our mind, of our consciousness, we are often caught by our consciousness. And when you talk about consciousness, you talk about separation, discrimination. That is the nature of our consciousness. The consciousness has a capacity to discriminate things. And we are much more than our consciousness. For example, in your consciousness, suffering is not happiness, and you are not me. I am not you. But in Buddhism, when you practice meditation, and you have been watching yourself deep enough, you discover your true self is much more than the consciousness. My true self, my true Kwan, is at the same time true David. And the separation between happiness and suffering, there is no any separation between Kwan and David. And I call that a home, a silence, a kind of home. And when I meditate, I can come back to such a place, and there's no war at home. At home, we accept each other. And when I come to a prisoner with that energy of being home, he can feel it. He understands. He understands there's no separation between me and him. And yet, don't misunderstand me. I don't think what I have done is correct. But I believe we need to help them. If we continue to judge them, to punish them, and they will continue to cause suffering to themselves and to the society. And so they need to get the punish for what they have done in the past, but they need to be helped too. And I come to them with the heart of wanting to help and not wanting to punish, wanting to judge, and they can feel it, they can feel it. And that is a very important moment for a prisoner. It's exactly like the moment when my Dutch friend say, "Kwang, don't fight, we are friends." And I came with almost the same kind of message. It's like, please, friend, don't fight. Don't fight. Make peace. Make peace with yourself. Make peace with the society. And sometimes I don't even say anything. They cried because they understood the message. They understood that energy. And you can call that a kind of teaching. I don't call that a kind of teaching. I call that the moment of being together, the moment we can recognize each other. As a Buddha, and for him, the prisoner is also the first time that he can recognize himself as a Buddha.
Do you feel that all of us on some level are prisoners, therefore, because we don't recognize ourselves, we see ourselves as separate and not part of a part of interbeing?
I think in our modern time, we believe too much in our consciousness, in what we see as the truth. And I often tell my friends, my students, I say, the Dharma, it means the teaching of the Buddha, the Dharma doesn't teach you the truth. It helps you to be free from the truth. And when you are too much attached to your own truth, you can live together with other people. And you are a prisoner. You are somehow you're lonely in your own truth. And the Dharma, the teaching, it helps you to be free from the attachment of your consciousness so that you can get in touch with a space where we are not separated. And when you are not separated, you're no longer a prisoner. So many times we are the prisoners of our mind. And I can see that. And I know I can help because I have been the prisoner of my mind too. And now I can step out of that prison. And you can ask, how can you step out of your mind? And I can tell you a very simple practice. My practice is to see you as a Buddha, as the Buddha. When I see you as the Buddha, I'm free. I'm free of my mind. When I see you as the Buddha, and I don't see you as an individual anymore. I don't see you as someone who is separated from me. When I see you as the Buddha, I see you as the teacher. I see you as a friend. I see you as myself. And right in that moment, I am free from my own prison. And I can look at you with respect. And I've seen that in the prisoners too. I can look at them with respect and they cried. They cry as children. And I want, this July, I will come to the US and I want to share these stories with my friends in the US. Because what I've seen there is every time I hear or I see about that, and I always cry. I remember the war in Vietnam. I think we can stop. I think together we can stop this violence together and don't give up. There is a way. David,
yes.
There is a way, and the way is looking to each other with more respect. That is the way. I don't even call that a practice because in that way, we can recognize each other as friends.
Do you think, though, I mean, this is the part that always, I think, is the challenge for those who want that to be a way of being, and that is, or can you do it by yourself when someone else you are relating to is not open? Does it require openness, or do you simply have to accept that they are not open and not willing or able to recognize you in return? Because sometimes that is how it is.
I can tell you that the prisoners, they were not open at me at all. They were not open. But when you come to a person and you don't have any judgment, you don't have any fear, you trust, and you have, and you recognize the insight, the wisdom, the love in the other person, and the other person has to be opened. He has to be open. There is not another way. When you really love the other person, and he cannot hurt you, he cannot. If you really trust the other person, he has to trust himself. That is what I call the true nature of us. And when you are able to get in touch with that nature, we must recognize each other as friends, as Buddhas. And my teacher have said to me, he said, "Quang, the next Buddha will be a community." And I'm sure we can do that. We can be a peaceful community on earth. If we look deeply in each other and we see the Buddha in each other.
Do you feel that that seems like a practice that requires people to go and go out, essentially, and go out into the world and practice that sensibility as a way of that, because no one will be free unless everyone is free?
You are everyone. For me, David is everyone. If I can see David, at the same time I can see everybody. There is no separation between David and everybody. There's no separation between you and everybody. If you can see yourself, you can see the other person. If you can see the other person, you can see yourself. If you can really can see the other person, you can see everybody. We are deeply connected. That is our true nature. And my teacher, he taught me about this when I was a novice, and I didn't understand that. I didn't say, but now I do. And I want to share this practice, share this insight. And in fact, I don't even have to share the insight. Who am I to share an insight? I just remind people about this insight. This insight is there in each of us. This insight is there in each of us. We do have this insight. We do know that we are each other. We do know that we belong to one family. We do know, and we just forget. That's all.
Well, I think I absolutely love listening to you talk, and I hope that I will get to see you when you come to America.
Yes.
I really appreciate everything you say, and I hope that you are able to reach as many people as possible. I want to thank you for talking to me, Quang Lu, about The Buddha in Jail. It's a wonderful book, but you are also a wonderful human being, and I appreciate it.
You too, David. Thank you very much. And I really want to see you when I'm there, but now I'm already see you in me.
and I feel you in me, I think.
Thank you.
Not as well, I think, as we could as if we were in person. But thank you again.
Thank you, David.
This is Writer's Cast, a podcast about books and authors. I'm David Wilk, your host. I've been talking to Quang Lu about The Buddha in Jail.